to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, this is Travis Johnson, the Nonprofit Architect, here today with Alicia Mathis. Alicia, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
You know, I'm doing pretty well. MathisNPS.com and check out Alicia Mathis's place where she does nonprofit mentoring. She's been doing the game for the last 10 years. She's amazing, and I'm holding her book right now. I have my 501c3 Now What, written by Alicia Mathis. Figure out what to do. We actually get all your stuff set up. Alicia, what's going on?
Not much. Trying to survive this COVID-19.
Yeah, you and everybody else. It's really changed the game for people in the nonprofit world. There's a whole lot of people out there that are scared to ask for money. There's a people out there that just keep asking, doing the same things they were always doing. There's this people in the middle that try to make us feel better about what's going on in the nonprofit in the world at this time, but they still care about people affected by COVID-19. Have you found that people in today's day and age are still able to raise money?
Oh, absolutely. What I am seeing out there is those organizations who have decided to ask for money, do it sensitively, are actually getting in more money. And their donors are even upping their average donation. And it's because they have laid out that there is a need and they're going to need this money to help support people after all of this is over. And they are raising more money. And it's just because they asked.
All right. So you're telling me that while on all non-essential workers, all non-essential personnel are not bringing in their regular paycheck, there's people out there giving above and beyond their normal giving during this time of crisis?
There are some people that this crisis hasn't affected as much. Mm. And so, yeah, they are giving. But I think what really it comes down to is that people want to help people. They want to make a difference. I think they're at home. They're feeling like there's nothing they can do. But then that favorite nonprofit comes in their inbox and says, hey, here's something you can do to help. Any amount will work, you know, will help. And they're like, okay, that's something I can do.
Yeah, absolutely. I've talked to so many of my friends that are in the nonprofit space, and they're not sure exactly how to proceed. Some of them are just sending out a thank you letter, and they're being giving, asking how they can help. And there's nothing wrong with that. And there's some that are acknowledging struggles during this time frame, and they're still asking for money on top of that. And I've seen where people are getting upset about that. That people are like, oh, you know, this big time of need when COVID is really, you know, wrecking and having a huge impact on people's personal lives. There's definitely a huge population where they're not going to be able to help right now. But there's this other population that you talk about that are still doing well, that COVID-19 hasn't really negatively impacted their business, that want to give more because they're able to. And it's not for everybody, but some people are able to give much, much more, and they understand this time of need. But if you're a nonprofit listening and you don't ask, I think you're making a mistake right here. And I think Alicia backs me up on that.
Really and truly, if you think about it, you are guaranteed not to get any money if you don't ask. That is 100% guarantee. You have to ask sensitively. I can't stress that enough. You can't ask for people's stimulus checks. I've seen that in some of the groups I'm in, where nonprofits are like, yeah, you know, when the stimulus package was first put out there, they were posting, yeah, let's ask for that stimulus check. And it's like, okay, that's not a sensitive ask, first of all. So you have to be sensitive. So saying something like, if you can't donate at this time, we completely understand. We hope that once things are better for you, you will remember us, or something to that effect. It helps those people who can't not feel guilty, because you don't want to guilt them into you know, not into giving, but, and it lets them know that you still care. Reach out to them and say, if you need help, you know, obviously we can't guarantee, but maybe we can connect you with resources that we know of.
Yeah. One of those things that, that nonprofits have is they have an obligation to meet their mission statement. And sometimes that mission statement encompasses the thing that you need. And even though you were a donor at one point, or you supported the organization at one point, you might be in a time of need. There's nothing wrong with that, right? These different things impact everyone differently. But sometimes the thing that you need falls within the mission statement of the organization you've been helping all along. And they're able to either give you some money directly or give you something that they have, one of their programs or one of their products that they have is now going to turn around and be able to meet your need. And that's okay for the short term. But you and I both know that the short-term game isn't the only game. Really, what you and I like is the long-term game. And the long-term game is fundraising as a whole, as a bigger entity, right? What does fundraising look like in the long-term game?
The long-term game is where you are thinking relationally. You are doing those things. You're telling people their impacts. The impacts of your organization. You are doing more than just asking. You have your donors as a partner. And so you're doing those long-term game. You know, the short-term game is where you treat people like an ATM. It's give me money, here's your money. Give me money, here's your money. But whenever you take them on as a partner and enter into that long-term game, you're saying, okay, here's what we've done with your money. Thank you so much for doing this. You're our hero. You're framing them as heroes, and you are continuing that relationship. And that relationship will last 20, 30, 40, 50 years. I like to level it up even more and do a long-term game. I mean, an infinite game where you are looking at generations. You're looking past just one person. You're looking at family trees. That's where legacy giving comes in. That's where you are. Your vision looks past just here and now in 5 and 10 and 20 years. It's looking at how can we make these threats opportunities. I was in an organization that was 130 years old, and they were facing some legislation that was going to completely change what they were doing. And instead of saying, oh, that's a threat, we need to block that legislation, they said, okay, what if this legislation comes to pass? What is our world going to look like, and where are the opportunities in that? They created two programs that work really well, and they're getting donations for. But that's thinking long-term. I mean, thinking infinite game.
Oh, absolutely. And your program, specifically your signature program, is one of the cornerstones of what makes a really good nonprofit. And when you think about the nonprofits out there that have stood the test of time, that have withstood the storms and the ups and the downs, they have a signature program, something that really defines who they are as a program. And no matter what happens, you're like, you know what? I know this organization does this. They do this very well, and it's all I know about that organization. What do you know about a signature program?
Well, in the book, I actually go through a signature program. So a signature program is what you're going to be known for. And it's especially important that you think through it your first year of being a nonprofit, because it's what you're going to be known for in the community. You're going to have this program around for many years. Now, all programs have a shelf life. So either they evolve or they are discontinued and something else comes in. But your signature program should, like I said, be that program that you want your organization known for. It should tie directly to your core values and your mission.
Who's out there right now that's really doing a great job with their signature program?
You put me on the spot. probably thinking big, the Red Cross probably has some pretty good core programs. You know, we know them as the blood donor people. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if that's a signature program for them. I know that they actually do more with their fire program. Whenever somebody's house is burnt down, mm-hmm. they're the first ones on the scene and they help you rebuild. I don't think that's quite as known, but if I had to pick a signature program, that's probably the one I would pick.
Oh, absolutely. And I know the Red Cross is known for their blood donations. If you're military, they send an official message that allows you, if you're deployed, to get back to be with your family. And that's really important that, you know, if you're a new nonprofit and you're listening to this, you want to make sure your mission statement encompasses not only what you're thinking about today, but maybe a broader mission that's going to allow you to expand and grow over time, because just one sect of what you care about is not going to be the only thing you care about over the life of your nonprofit. So something like the Red Cross with their blood donations and their fire program and their messages for military, there's going to be more things that you care about. If you start a nonprofit and you only care about feeding the homeless, that might be great for today, tomorrow, and the next 3 years. But 3 years from now, someone approaches you and they say, you know what? What about housing for the homeless? Is that something that we can do? And it may or may not be true because your mission statement might preclude them from expanding and adding something like taking care of housing for the homeless. So instead of having your mission statement just be, I'm going to feed the homeless, it might be, I'm going to take care of the homeless, which today might mean feeding them and bringing them meals, but tomorrow it might include healthcare. You know, 3 years from now it might include housing. 4 years from now it might include some kind of drug program. And 5 years from now, who knows? But in making sure that you make the proper leap on your mission statement and ensure that's going to cover the growth, I think is very important.
Right. One of the mission statements that I absolutely love, and it's from the Methodist Home for Children and Youth in Macon, Georgia. And it reads, in response to Christ in the church, the mission of the Methodist Home for Children and Youth is to be a model agency that restores childhoods, strengthens families, and cultivates a people-building organization. It's very straightforward. And mm-hmm. I can tell you that those three categories, restoring childhoods, strengthening families, and cultivating a people-building organization, that is their litmus test. Every program, everything they do, they can put it, they can say, okay, where does it fit? Is it a restores childhoods? Is it a strengthening family? Or is it a people-building organization? Where does this fit? And if it doesn't fit, they say, that's not the program for us. And they move on.
That's important because so many organizations are faced with something called mission creep. And mission creep can be, you know, we're doing this today, but tomorrow we might be interested in this. And the next day we might be interested in this. And 6 years from now we might be interested in this. And you end up getting off topic. One of the things that nonprofits have that regular businesses don't is nonprofits have to meet their mission statement. And that's not something a regular business does. Like, I'm wearing a hat right now that says nonprofit architect on it. And they can do or change or do whatever they want to as a business to make hats, other logos, and other t-shirts and whatever they do because they're a business. But if they were a nonprofit and they say, we're going to make hats to help share the vision, then they can only make hats. But they say that we're going to make all sorts of different swag that's going to empower nonprofits, say, they could have so many other opportunities to expand their vision. You don't want it to be too narrow, and you don't want it to be too broad, but you want it to be the right length and the right size to fit not only your vision, but growth for the future. But not so broad that you can't get anyone to understand what it is that you do.
Exactly. And that is so difficult. If you've ever tried to write a mission statement, that is so difficult.
I've had to write a few, helping some clients of mine refine and hone what it is that they're talking about. And it's frustrating and it's wonderful at the same time because you want to be able to build something that is not just a single line, that is not just a single focus. You want to be specialized, yes, but not so closed off that you can't grow. And that's the real challenge. If you're too broad and you say, I want to help people do X, it's hard for people to think of that person. Like, who do I know that needs this product? If you're like, I want to help someone sprint and do better at swimming, and short distance swimming is such a small category. You might only be able to help 100, 250 people in the world. It's hard to find that left and the right edge to find a way to grow, because that's such a small category. You want to be able to get it defined enough to help the people you want to help, but broad enough to grow if you need to.
Exactly. And like I said, that is so difficult to do.
I know one of the specialties that you work on, one of the things you really enjoy is raising money and not doing it the two or three ways we think about on a regular basis. You do things like an ungala. What is an ungala?
You treat it as if it was a gala. So you send out the invitations, but the catch is it's no show. There's no caterer. There's no venue. There's no way to show up unless some people actually put in like a Facebook Live or some kind of streaming aspect. And right now, I mean, that's a great thing to do, an ungala. It's an event. There's no overhead. It's a fun way to donate. Instead of the traditional fundraising letter or email, you have this event you buy tickets for, but you don't show up. You can actually be in your pajamas during the time of the gala. And there's no rubber chicken dinners. That's awesome.
Rubber chicken. That is the worst. If you are your fundraising person and you're putting together fundraisers and you're picking the menu, make sure that you test all the food. I have been to so many dinners that you start cutting into the chicken and you're distracted on what the message is, that you feel ripped off for the tickets you bought because the meal is so terrible that you don't even want to be there anymore. Don't be that person.
Yeah. So yeah, that's an ungala. And it's been around for a long time. It hadn't really caught on because people just were like, oh, that's a little weird. But now in this social distancing time, it is the perfect gala.
I see people more and more online doing different events, and they're actually getting dressed up at home. They're putting on the tux, the bow tie, doing their hair. Ladies have all the makeup on. They're dressed the nice. They have the cute dress or the sexy dress, and they're on here participating in these Zoom conferences where there's 40 or more people online, and they're just having a blast because they're able to get engaged and do something with other people. Have you seen the same thing?
I have. That is another option, and it's fun. And right now, like I said, during this time of social distancing, one of the things that I think we really are craving is that other human interaction. And even if we have to do it in a Zoom conference, it's somebody outside the people of our home. And I think we're getting kind of sick of the people at our home.
I don't know what you're talking about because I love the people in my home. But of course, my home is currently 7,000 miles from where I am. So maybe it's just me personally, but I haven't had that particular problem. But if you're here and you're listening and your concern is fundraising, there's only one thing that you really need to know, and that is you should be building relationships with your donors. Building relationships with their donors, understanding their needs, their desires, what they want, and what drives them to give. What have you seen, Laisha?
That's exactly right. Sustainable funding starts with your donor list, whether that's you have email addresses only, or you have email and physical addresses or addresses. It doesn't matter. Starting with those donors, building that donor list, it is absolutely the sustainable fundraising, because we saw during this time when events were no longer something we could do, in-person events, people were scrambling. Those nonprofits that were on that event hamster wheel, they're scrambling, trying to figure out what to do because they still need money coming in. But those organizations that went back to their donor list and said, okay, we can email, we can snail mail, COVID did not affect that at all. And so they went back and they said, hey, there's a need. We know there's going to be a greater need once we come through this. Help. And they have been getting record donations. They've even seen donors upping their donation. And that is incredible. They are actually raising more money now than they have in the past year.
Yeah, just because you may be personally impacted by this time in this world does not mean that other people are being affected the same way. Yes, some are. Of course they are. There's people out there that are getting no paycheck. The stimulus check was all they have. There's some people who are on salary. There's some people working from home digitally. And there's some people that are still going in on their front lines every day. But all of that vast array of people, there's still people that care about what you're doing, that care about your mission and your vision, and are still able to give. Don't stop asking just because it's a rough time for some people. And I'm not saying some people lightly. That some people, even though it's a quick two words, is not to be taken lightly. There's a lot of people, especially listening to the show, that are greatly affected by what's going on right now. And if you're greatly affected right now, hop on Facebook, send me a message, let me know how it is that you're affected. Let me see how I can help you. I'm sure Alicia is the same way. She would love to help. But there are so many people that are not affected, are still willing to give, that are still willing to champion your cause. Don't stop asking just because times may or may not be rough for you.
That's absolutely true. You must ask sensitively. I mean, I can't stress that enough, but don't quit asking. I can guarantee you, you are not going to get donations if you don't ask.
Now, we were talking the other day about social media and keeping that up and keeping that in the forefront. I know a lot of people out there, the COVID-19 is changed the way they do business. Some people have been doing it from home already, but now you also have kids at home, and it's hard to keep up with the social media sometimes. Get the engaging post, getting the thoughtful ask out there and doing a great videos. Sometimes the kid hops in the frame with you. But you were talking to me earlier about Guy Kawasaki and how he does his social media guide. What does that look like, the Guy Kawasaki guide to social media?
He is an influencer, and his strategy, he has a book called The Art of Social Media, and his strategy is a 411 strategy, and it's four pieces of content that are curated, one piece of content that's original, and one piece of content that is promotional. And for a new nonprofit who doesn't have a lot of content, it's actually a really good strategy for them. So not only does it help you with content, but it's also helping you build credibility and influence. And so that's the strategy I always suggest new nonprofits use. You can usually go out and get your curated content from industry. Mm-hmm. So if you are a research nonprofit, you can usually find information out there on research of your topic, mm-hmm, or anything like that, and share it. And then your original content is, if you do a blog post, you can put that out there. I usually do original posts as, you know, in the industry, we call it the grip and grin, where, you know, you've got the big check and or the check and the person shaking the hand and smiling. It's a grip and grin. So you can put that up, thanking donors, those kind of original posts, and then your promos. And that's your in-kind donations. That's asking for donations. It's those kinds of posts.
There's so many times that I talk to nonprofits and I see what they're doing. They have a lot of engagement. They have a lot of posts. And I do this thing called this free social media evaluation. And it's not too crazy, right? I'm not some kind of guru in social media, but I'll go through and I'll look to see what they're posting, either on their personal page or in their group. And I'll scroll back and to see, I've talked to a few people that do things with law enforcement. And I'll look at their posts. Their posts are very engaging. They're very thoughtful. But I'll have to go back like 75 days to see a post that's actually about the organization.
Right.
It's actually about them and what they do and them asking for money. If you're on social media and that's one of your primary means to connect with your audience, and you're not talking about what it is that you do specifically for the cause that you care about, I think you're doing it wrong if you're not doing it at least once a week. Pick a day of the week. It could be Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays. It doesn't matter. But pick one of the day of the week that you're talking about. You know, this thing that we do, this thing that we care about, here's what we do with your money. We're engaging here. We're engaging there. Our program is this. Our product is that. And if you're not talking about you specifically once a week, I think you're doing it wrong. What do you think, Alicia?
And that 411 strategy would actually, you could use that as an original post. So for every, you know, every five posts, you would get it. So that would be once a week. And not only what you do, the impact you are making in your community. That's another thing. Donors like to know they're making a difference. And so if you can show them how your organization, through their donations, is making a difference, that is going to be very powerful for your donors.
Alicia, what would you say to someone right now that has it on their heart to start a nonprofit? What advice would you give that person?
The honest advice is to really take a look. I know that founders have this great passion for this idea, usually because they've either experienced the problem itself or they know somebody that's experienced this problem, and the nonprofit that they want to put out there solves that problem in the way that they wanted it solved when they were in that situation. My chief advice would be to make sure that you are not duplicating services, that you know something about nonprofit work. So go volunteer for a nonprofit. Ask to be in their development department, their admin department. Volunteer in all kinds of different places in the nonprofit. Understand how a nonprofit operates. Because one of the things I hear a lot is the founder will create this nonprofit and then it's like, well, how do I keep control of the nonprofit? And that's the thing. Once you incorporate, once you become a 501c3, it's no longer yours. It's the community's. And so you really need to understand that before you walk into it. But just knowing too that you are not duplicating services, that is a huge thing, especially with funding.
Yeah, if you're a control freak, the nonprofit world is not for you. You might be able to get a couple people on your board that really don't interact and don't say anything. You might call yourself the founder and the executive director and kind of maintain that control. But if that's what you're doing, chances are you're not having the impact you think you're having. You're not able to generate the funding that you need. You don't have the board helping guide you along the way. And if you were having the board guide you along the way, you might not have the vision that you want to have. When people call me and they talk like, Travis, I want to start a nonprofit, almost immediately the first thing I say to them is, don't start a nonprofit. And I know you think that's crazy. You're listening to a show about nonprofit work and helping you build a stronger nonprofit. The deal is that most people do not need to start a nonprofit in order to impact the cause or the people that they want to help. The people that they want to help are a lot of times able to be helped through the business you already own. You're able to donate to whatever cause, or a nonprofit that's already in operation that you can help give to or direct people to impact the person that you want to help. And it's almost counterintuitive to listen to a show like mine that talks about helping and building stronger nonprofits and be like, what do you mean you don't want me to start a nonprofit? Starting a new nonprofit does not mean you're going to be able to help the people that you want to help.
Well, and I saw a statistic that said 60,000 nonprofits are started. The IRS grants 501c3s to 60,000 nonprofits a month. That is a lot of competition out there. And there's got to be some overlap. Because if you think about how many that is in a year, there's a lot of competition. And you don't want your nonprofit to be in competition or overlap services. Because like I said, when you apply for grants or you're trying to get donors, you don't want those services to overlap, because your donor is going to look and say, well, I can go to XYZ nonprofit and help the same people. So
you want to make sure that you take the time and do an ask it campaign and figure out what gaps there are in services. Maybe in the place that you are and you want to feed the homeless, there's five or six organizations feeding the homeless, but maybe you discover that the homeless population has to go to these places in order to get fed. And maybe your solution, maybe the thing that's new or different, is that you are going to take the food to them directly. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But if you're looking to start a nonprofit and there's five or six places that are feeding the homeless, if that's your thing, and you want to start up another building that's also feeding the homeless and they have to come to you, are you really providing something new? Are you really providing something that's different? Are you really going to have an impact on the people that you want to help because you're doing the same thing as everybody else? Maybe you discover that there's a nonprofit out there doing something close to what it is that you're doing, and you can add a program to that nonprofit without starting a new one. Use their 501c3, use their name recognition, use the money that's already coming to them to start a new program that's going to help the people that you want to impact. Maybe there's someone in the state next to you that has it figured out and they're willing to let you use their name to start a branch of their nonprofit in the state that you're in to impact the same people for the same reason. Maybe you discover that the thing that you're trying to do is done by someone in your town and you can volunteer or donate or whatever it is that they need to help expand what they're doing. Maybe your contacts are going to be helpful. Maybe you're going to have a more deep impact in the community at the state or federal level of what it is that you care about. But it does not have to be your name. If you're concerned that your name isn't in the spotlight, you're on the wrong trail already.
Absolutely. And another thing, if you wanted to start a nonprofit and you find that there's a service, there's already somebody doing what you want to do, but you see another hole in services and you're determined to start that nonprofit, then you can fill that hole and partner with that other nonprofit and get funding that way too. Mm-hmm. So, because I know foundations, they really like it when nonprofits cooperate and work with each other there, because for them, it actually increases their impact. They're able to give the same amount of money and increase their impact in the community. And that's what they're looking to do.
Yeah, I'm definitely in agreement. Alicia, it's been great having you on the show today. Where can people find you? Where do you hang out the most?
I like Facebook, so I'm on Facebook at Mathis Nonprofit Services. I have an Instagram account. It's under Alicia _ Mathis. I'm on LinkedIn as Alicia Mathis. So you can find me in a lot of different places, but the Facebook is the best place to find me. Email is always good, alicia.mathis@mathisnps.com. And of course, the website, mathisnps.com.
Well, I hope I can direct a few hundred people in your direction to help get traction in what they're doing in their nonprofit service. And I hope the best for you. It's great talking to you. Great interview, as always. Thank you, Alicia.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.